Good evening. My name is Leo Hurley. I'm one of those cross-addicted, inside-out addicted, backward addicted, chemically dependent, polyunsaturated, manic depressant, homicidal, suicidal, alcoholic. The reason I bring that up is because when I got to AA, we were just pure alcoholics. Right? I got all kinds of titles running around, substance abuser, dope fiend, cocaine addicts. And the only reason I didn't use too many drugs is they weren't around, to be honest with you. I come from Brooklyn, and the only thing we knew about drugs in the early 50s was supposedly Spanish Fly was an upper and Saltpeter was a downer. This is the 8th conference. This will probably be the best one from what I can see from this group here. But I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me here. Because it's nice because I should be sober 51 years, 5 months, and 2 days today. But I had trouble the first 33. I didn't go to many meetings. So anybody here is not going to go to meetings, guess what? You ain't going to get sober. I haven't found it necessary or unnecessary to take a drink since February 19th, 1973. Not that I wouldn't like to drink. I don't care what anybody else tells you up here. I'd like to whip in that bar out here and have 80 and 90 quick ones and pick up the barmaid and... I was cross-addicted long before they thought of that word. From 52 to 71, I remember today hearing a couple of people talking, and Mary last night talking about diet pills. And God, I had them. I took one a day for about a week, and then I upped it to 5. So for 20 years, I took 5 diet pills a day. And what it did, it kept me wide awake. I was a wide awake drunk. I drove at one speed, about 100. I drove up you, around you, honking, beeping. If you cut me off in Omaha, I'd chase you to Kansas to cut your back off. I come from one of those dysfunctional families. I come from a dysfunctional neighborhood, to be honest with you. Everybody drank. Cats drank, dogs drank, bookmakers drank, long shots drank, everybody. Good God, you didn't drink, we didn't deal with you. I'm here to tell you, for me personally, the number one cause of alcohol and drug addiction in the world is alcohol and drugs. Not my mother, or my father, or the Irish, or the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church did wonders for me. They kept me from going blind. I mean, they used to talk about, I got that very early on in life. God did not like lying, cheating, humping, stealing, sniffing, puffing, popping. Holy God, they used to talk to me about love and being nice and... fidelity. I thought that was a stereo system they wanted from me. I didn't know. So I got rid of God real early, and that's the first sign of alcoholism. The spiritual goes out the window. You then become wacky, and then you start to get physically sick. But alcoholism doesn't run in my family. It gallops right through it. I grew up, I was born in 1939 to... whole family. My father had 7 brothers and 4 sisters. They were all alcoholics. My grandfather was a gun runner and a bookmaker, and he owned speakeasies, and all my uncles were gun runners and bookmakers. So I grew up in a neighborhood. My uncles were Bone Crusher, Butch, Muggsy, Gangsy. My father's friends were Patsy the Hunchback, Willie the Snake, and Joey Bag of Donuts, and what a crew. And all alcoholics, to be honest with you. So I did all my social drinking from 1939 until 1952, I guess. I don't know much about social drinking. But I wasn't told not to drink, and I drank. But I know why I drank. I'll describe it to you. It was June 1952. If I looked up in a calendar, I could probably find the date. I walked into a schoolyard. I was going to start hanging around with a street gang. I was only 13. I was 5'6". I weighed 200 pounds. I had a little alfalfa haircut, woof, with a little cowlick in the back. I looked like Spanky from our gang. I got into this schoolyard, and I was going to start hanging around with these real tough guys. These were real men. They were 15 and 16, and they had DAs and peg pants and coat collars up and black jackets. And, Jesus, they had mom and dad tattooed and murder and hate and kill all over their arms. And the girls had on these pink jackets and dungarees, and I looked around, and I was in awe of this little thing. And I couldn't figure out what to do. And some local jackass come home. He just got out of Elmira Penitentiary. Little Augie. I don't know why they called him Little Augie, because there was no Big Augie. So he was Little Augie. And he bought some beer. And we went into the alley, and I drank it. And I don't know when it happened, three-quarters of the way down, maybe the whole bottle down, but it happened. I was 6'10", 290, arms on me like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I had that Clint Eastwood look. I had mom and dad tattooed on one arm. I looked around at all these guys, and they got small looking to me. And the women were all looking at me saying, "Take me, Leo, take me." Oh. Now, let me tell you, if carrot juice would have done what that done, I'd be getting Carrots Anonymous today. But if you're an alcoholic, you also know what happened. I went home that night, and I spun around in the bed, and I threw up, and I woke up the next morning. I was 5'6", 200 pounds, back in a world I couldn't understand and hated. I went back to that same schoolyard the next night, and it happened again. One beer down, whack, 290. Oh, boy. And that's why I drank. It made me feel better. It enabled me to dance, to become a local jerk. It enabled me to talk to the girls. Boy, it was awesome. If it still did it today, guess what? I'd still drink it. But it quit working, and long before I knew about it, too. Now, I wouldn't use heroin because it required needles. I won't use needles today. You give me liquid heroin on the rocks, I'll drink it. I got no problem with that. Being a speed freak, I was always in one speed, fast. So I never had time for marijuana because it required rolling these little baby cigarettes and passing it around. I couldn't see doing that, God. And I got out of it before, because I got there in 1972, and cocaine hadn't been around, really. And I'm happy, because I watched them today, and I'm in awe of this. They got a big pile of it, and they cut it up. Why would you cut it up? Sniff the whole pot while you got it there. I mean, my God. I wouldn't sniff two of them $100 things. I'd have a fire hose up my nose. So. They order eight balls. I'd order bowling balls full of that stuff. So I'm happy cocaine and crack. They smoke these little pipes in New York. I'd need something like a chimney to smoke that stuff. So cross addiction is nothing new. It never has been, anyway. But I immediately started to learn some of the good stuff from Brooklyn that alcoholics learn, I guess. I started off Friday night would be what we would call shark skin suit night in my neighborhood. We would put on the shark skin suit, pink shirt, pink tie, 2 hours putting that DA together so it looked good in the back, and the cufflinks so they would sparkle, shoes, keychain hanging down, little men in, because that's all they had years ago. We didn't have all this other garbage. And you would head out looking for a little action, going out to meet the women. And I was a kind of shy guy with the girls. They sort of scared me and dancing and all that junk. And I would go into a nice-looking place, and there'd be a nice-looking babe way down the end, and I'd wink. I'd have about 20 quick drinks, because I drank quick. Down they went. I'd say, "I think I'll ask her to dance." Then I'd have five more, and I'd say, "Screw her. She wants to dance, let her come down here and ask me." No, we did very little dancing. When I found these little diet pills, I had also grown to 5'11", and I weighed 140, and I stated that. I was into anorexia and all of that stuff long before it came out. I didn't want to go over that, and better living through chemistry. If it took six diet pills, I took them. If it took five, I took them. I just thought they were for the figure. I never knew they were amphetamines because the doctor gave them to me. So I loved that. I loved that stuff. I could just stay up for hours and weeks and drink gallons of stuff, and I had gotten accepted fifth out of 5,000 into one of the best Catholic high schools in Brooklyn, run by the Jesuits. 1 year later, I was the first one they threw out. See, I had two words for you now. I know. You looked at me, I told you, I know. I knew Einstein's theory. I knew everything. The alcohol opened up my mind to everything. I told them Jesuits, and they threw me out of this school. And they transferred me to a school, and the only requirement for membership there was, you don't bother us, and we won't bother you. So I only went on Wednesdays, because I knew. And I had wood shop, tin shop, metal shop, electric shop, and I don't even know what a screwdriver looks like. All I did is hung out in the corner with these other jerks, and we'd wore black jackets and zip guns and boots and skeletons on the back of our jacket. When you came in, we'd saw your books in half. You know, we'd saw your jacket in half. Because I was going to be a millionaire, and I knew that, so there was no problem with that. And the way I was going to be a millionaire, I was going to win the Irish sweepstakes. And I would look, because they used to publish the names, and I would be in there looking, and guess what? I didn't have a ticket. But the usual scene of going out on a Friday night was, you know, when you get in there and you have those 20 quick drinks, you would got to go to the bathroom. So I would head into the men's room, and I would pick up that toilet seat with my foot. God forbid my hand should touch that toilet seat. My grandmother warned me about toilet seats years ago, you know, don't touch them, so the foot would pick them up. Now, 4 o'clock in the morning, my tongue would be in that bowl, throwing up. I'd come back Saturday morning, I'd have pigeon crap all over me, bullet holes in my jacket, knife. Everyone see that picture, blind date? Geez, I'd have my eye ripped and, you know. And someone said to me, where the hell did you go? I used to have a little Jewish tailor around the corner when I'd take my suit in every morning. I'd say, here, Abe, give me the 3-hour service. I need it for tonight. He'd say, for what? He'd open it up, there'd be knife marks down the back. And one time I blew a big hole in the knee. And I always had an answer for you. And he said to me, well, I do it this. I said, weave it. He said, weave it. You need a new leg on there. And he used to call his son over. Come here, look at him. Where did he go? I mean, I lived in Brooklyn, for God's sake. What the hell was I going into Vietnam or something? So when I look at the first step, my life wasn't unmanageable. It was unbelievable when I look back. My cars were a disgrace. My dates. They were bizarre. Because like I say, I was a big mouth with the guys, shy with the girls, and I would start out in a nice place like the Copacabana. Nice looking babe, something like Bo Derek, about 9 o'clock at night. About 9:15, she got rid of me. She says, cuckoo, this guy, holy God. 4 o'clock in the morning, I'd be in some hamburger joint with something looked like John Derrick. 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd wake up in some flea bag hotel, and I got up quick. I don't know about people waking up, and I popped up, you know, because, and then, there's a pair of feet next to me. Oh, no, and I would start up, and, oh, no! Oh, my God, I'd have someone in there 190 years old, look like a mummy, you know, arrows through her head. And she said to me, we going for breakfast? I said, we are going nowhere, are you crazy? I'm sure she was as shocked to see me as I was to see her, don't get me wrong. Then I would run downstairs and I would get into one of my new cars, and my cars were a disgrace. I would buy these things brand new. 6 weeks later, I couldn't give them along. Because I did 100. If I hit you, I just kept going. I had no time to stop. And taking these diet pills, I didn't eat all day. But I'd be hungry around 4 in the morning, and I'd whip down to Nathan's in Coney Island, and I'd jump out on the sidewalk, and I'd have 12 hot dogs, 15 chow mein on a bun. Quick, back in my car. 100 miles an hour. Now, when you eat that way, you get sick. Only I ain't got time to pull over. So I would open up the window, stuff would rattle around the back. I'd have hot dogs stuck in the thing there. If I was over in Little Italy, I'd have linguine shooting out of my mouth. And I would read this stuff for my butler, and I didn't have one. I got married for the first time in 1960. I was going with a lovely girl, and much to our family's dismay, I married her. And the only thing that changed was my address, because now I didn't know what anybody was talking about. You see, I heard in the fellowship about, you know, reading, and they said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And I did. I hated you. I hated myself. How could I like you? So I used to, everybody I would see, I wanted to be him. I wanted to be there. I was never happy here. If I lived in Brooklyn, I wanted to live in Jersey. If I lived in Jersey, I wanted to live in California. If I moved to California, I wanted to be back in Brooklyn. I had a green suit. I wanted the blue one. So I was never happy where I was. I was never happy with who I was. So I would accuse my wives of having affairs with the bread man, the milkman, the paper boy, anybody, because if there was a paper girl or a paper man, I would have tried to have an affair. I thought everybody was a dirtbag like me. I also would have accused her of wanting to be with everybody else because I wanted to be everybody else. So why would you want to be with me? And they used to tell me, Leo, I love you. I'd look at them. I thought love was something you did at 4 in the morning when you came home and struck out all over the neighborhood. That's what my idea of love was. That's sad, because that's what I thought sex and love were the same thing, and that's the way you showed it. So my marriages didn't work out too well. Around this time, I got the business opportunity of a life. I became a bartender. No, this was awesome. If there's anybody out there going to try and change drinks, I've done it all. I have tried. We talked today about it. I've been baptized, sprayed, sprinkled, screwed, tattooed. I've taken pledges with the devil, karate lessons, judo lessons, yoga, everything in order to be able to drink. And guess what? It never worked. I've tried drinking left-handed. I used to go to the bar and I put my right, and the guy said, Smitty, you lose your right hand or something? I said, no, I'm just trying a new system. I tried drinking on one leg. I've tried drinking white wine with fish, red wine with meat. Then I'd get on a health kick. I'd start to drink vodka. Now, I drank vodka with vitamin B6, vitamin B7, vitamin B12, Geritol. I mixed it with Geritol. I mixed it with Seritan, which is a laxative. I didn't even know that. I thought it was a damn vitamin. I would try everything going. God almighty, beer only, control drinking. Now, that's the worst. The old lady would be on my case about something, so I would try some controlled drinking. And we made a deal one night, and she said, you have 1 an hour. Now, I would guess that's a normal request for some lunatic. So we got to the party at 8, and whew, I threw down the first drink. What the hell are you doing for the next 59 and a half minutes? Finally, I turned my watch ahead. I couldn't even handle that one. I've tried all the shop guys. See, I hung out in bars with liars. All liars. You had 6 kids, I got 8. You make $1,000 a week, I make $1,250. You know the bishop, I know the cardinal. You know, just one lie after the other. And I also knew I was an alcoholic. I took one of those tests one time. I don't know why I took this test, I just took it. And I thought these were manhood questions. And the first thing says, you spend all your money on alcohol. I said, certainly. Did you ever have a car accident while drinking? I said, geez, I had one last night. I wrote that right in there. Next question said, have you ever beaten up your wife under the influence of alcohol? I wrote in just a little, and I wrote that in there. But I was proud of the fact that my neighborhood, you know, punching the old lady around wasn't really manly. I didn't consider, I got around to it, don't get me wrong. Threatening with guns was okay. Kill you when I get back here and I'm rubbing that little thing there. And the next question comes is, have you ever been in a hospital for alcoholism? And I said, no. I held on to that. Because there were no hospitals for alcoholics. There were only insane asylums. And that's why it grieves me if I hear anybody yelling about treatment today. There was no place to put guys like me. You went to the nut house. Today, treatment centers are nice. They're there. They take them in. They help them get better. Years ago, I got chucked into this, they call it G building in Brooklyn. Gene might know where it is. It's on Clarkson in Albany. And if anybody's seen what they did is they took you in and they gave you an examination. And then they gave you two uniforms. One was a little white sheet, and it didn't fit around. Your backside stuck out. And they gave you these little white crepe paper slippers. Or the other one, if your mouth was running off enough, you got, and it had ropes and chains on it. It's called a straitjacket. And on it went. You went up to the third floor, and some guy kicked you out into a room. So you automatically got against the wall because this thing. And then you look around, it looked like a Casper party. Everybody running around in white sheets. Woo! And you know, you're looking and, Jesus. And then I was always a quick study. I would look around. I could tell who was who in the bar and who the loan shark was. I know the tough guys were. So up here, they had a card game going. So a little concrete table, and I got right into this game. Only today in treatment centers, I know in there, they play with Don and Joe and Mary and Ted and Alice. Well, up there we were playing with some different people. There was Caesar and Napoleon and Lincoln and Cleopatra, and let me tell you, if you want to play, you get in there, and you got to play. How many, if you're in there, Cleo, how many with you? And then the guy next to me says, psst. I said, yeah? He said, I'm an undercover agent. I said, I know that. Holy God. And the next morning, they're still undercover agents. Now I'm sober. And then the psych would come in, and he'd give you a test. What day is it? Tuesday. What's your mother's name? Mom. Okay, boom, you can go. So hanging out in these places, I looked for cures for alcohol. And I didn't even know if they were cures. I wasn't a fall-down drunk. I never was. I just wanted to be high all day long, cockeyed, because I didn't know how to deal with anything else. I just wanted to be high, and I didn't really care how I got there. I used to, one guy told me one time, little guy, Tony, shucks, you can sue $1,000 ring. I said, come here, he said to me, you been getting sick lately, kid? I said, yeah. He said, good. What I want you to do tonight is go home and drink a little olive oil. It'll coat your stomach, and this way you won't get sick. So I went home, and being an alcoholic, I bought a big bottle, and I drank it. And, well, that's nothing. It just coats your stomach. It's not bad. You know what happened, though? At 4 in the morning when I threw up, boom, it hit the back of the wall. That's all it did. It slid out. I made my first AA meeting in 1964. I was in a whole lot of hot water, and someone suggested I call AA. And God, what a thing to be calling AA. So I'm in a bar, and I called up, and I got this nice woman on the phone, and she says to me, Jesus, Leo, you're in luck. I said, look, lady, not for nothing, right? How can I be having any luck talking to you? What is wrong with you? She says, we have a meeting right on your corner. I said, are you nuts? Suppose somebody sees me. Now, I didn't mind fires in the house, police arresting me, cars look like I won the demolition derby, divorces, no jobs, but God, going to AA. So she said, where would you like to go? I said, San Francisco. I'll fly out there. So we settled on the S end of Brooklyn, which is called Bay Ridge, which is about 20 miles out. And I went on a Friday night, and I dressed appropriately. I put on my Black Mafia suit, Black Mafia shirt, Black Mafia tie, Black Mafia hat, black sunglasses, black mustache. I looked like Zorro coming into this thing. And what a shock I got. I walk in there, and they were all old people. I'm talking old. The average age in AA in 1964 was 55. They looked 105. It was a little old Irishman sitting there. I hit him on the back. Smoke came out. He was like a mummy. He was all pasty. Holy God, I looked around, and I heard them say that. I heard the speaker say, we don't drink nothing in AA. So I sat down next to a big guy, because I always sat down next to big guys in case there was any trouble. I thought, man, get in there, hook him. I sit down, and when this speaker led up and he says, we don't drink nothing here, I said, here's a chance to ask an intelligent question. And I said to the big guy, what about beer? He jumps up in the air, he said, I said nothing. I said, holy Christ, I put my hat down, I said, oh my God. And then I looked around, and I seen all these slogans. Easy does it, live and let live, be nice, but for the grace of God. And I said, and then I seen the slogan I liked. Said exit. Zappo, out I went. And I went out and I jumped in my car and I did 100 miles an hour back to my favorite watering hole. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. And I got in there, it was packed. Wall-to-wall hoopals. I'm talking, it was packed. And I got right in the corner so no one would shoot me. And bartender turns around, he says to me, hey, cuz, where the hell were you? Because it wasn't like me not to be there at 6 o'clock. And I said, Jesus, Jerry, I went to an AA meeting. Jesus, don't you ever say that, and don't you ever go back there. I said, why not? He says to me, you can't be an alcoholic. You come from a nice family. And I said, ha-ha, here's a professional man telling me this, my bartender. 2 years later, Jerry died in his sleep. His liver exploded. These are the people I listen to. Who else would you listen to? I had all types of problems. I went to bars. We had lawyers in there, doctors, you know, no degrees, but they were in there. All divorced people, so if you needed any divorce advice, you know, you got it right in there. They were all divorced. I was divorced, you know. Anyway, I decided around this time to change addresses because I knew that was... Oh, I was in front of a judge. You'll like this one. And he's got all these charges to show you. And he was reading. And he said to me, I remember him. He looked down just like from up here. And he said to me, Mr. Hurley, just what do you think the problem here is? And I said, the Italians. He said, what? You see, I said, well, I married all these crazy Italian women, and they keep me... The guy, get them out of here! But that was the perception at the time I was under. If it wasn't the Italians, it was the Irish. If it wasn't the Irish, it was my mother. If it wasn't my mother, it was my father. If it was my upbringing. I was poor. I wasn't poor. It was always an excuse as to why I was drinking. You had my life, you drink too. But like I said, the number one cause of alcoholism was alcohol. Because if I didn't pick it up, guess what? I wouldn't get drunk. I heard that at that meeting. It's the first drink. I said, oh, my God, these people are really sad. I knew maybe 90. I figured out the other day, I never got a DWI. They didn't give them out, I guess, in those days. And I figured out the other day, I should have had like 1,860 of them. Good ones, too. Not those 0.17s or whatever they give them out for. You'd have stopped me at 4 in the morning, I'd have blown about a 10 on that meter. That cop, boom, would have exploded on him because I was drinking for 20 hours by the time you nailed me. And I drove at speeds 100 around you. So what I did this time is I got rid of the old lady because it was her fault. It was always somebody's fault. And I got a new apartment. I was going to change. I moved up in class. I got 20 sharkskin suits, 40 mohair suits, 30 pairs of pointy alligator shoes. These little pointy guys. If I kicked you, I'd stab you to death with these things. And I always wore a keychain, big one hanging in here. And I always used to have this hoop missing because I would leave it in the ignition. Out would come my stupid hoop. Anyway, I move into this new apartment, me and two other hoopals. In we go, we had wall-to-wall carpeting, piped-in music. A little Irish doorman used to say good morning byes on the way in. And this was going to be the new Leo. And this was like June of 66. By December, the only thing we were missing in this apartment was some seagulls. You couldn't believe it. Rugs were gone. Piped-in music was gone. We had a Dempsey dumpster in the middle. People living there I didn't even know. We had chicken bones all over the place. Roaches like dogs, woof, woof, running through the place. Guys shooting guns out the window. I was in charge of dishes, and I don't do dishes today. I threw them out the window. The word in this apartment house was, stay off the second floor. The Hell's Angels living there. And this was going to be the new Leo. It was always going to be. I was drinking my pinky up and pinky down and pinky around. And I like to drink top shelf Crown Royal and Shivers Regal and Night Train and Mad Dog and Ripple. Whatever went, I drank because I never found a drink I didn't like because it did what it was supposed to do for me. I got married again. We got married again. Each time it was the same story. I married a nice girl with three kids. The last time I was going to be a new Leo. You take a drunk in a suit, you put him on a plane, you send him to California. You know what you got? You get a drunk in a suit in California. See, I didn't understand that. I was always into geographics of changing or changing my address or changing bars or whatever it was going to be. Getting married or not. Whenever I was married, I wanted to be single. If I was single, I wanted to be married. I didn't know what the hell I wanted to be. I didn't want to be sober, though. I knew that much. I had seen sober people. I came back to AA in 1968, and I came to a meeting, and of course they asked me that crazy question Tom was talking about. You got a sponsor? I said, where's Bill Wilson? Guy said, he's busy. Of course, I always went to the top. You know, if I got arrested, I wanted to see the captain. You know, I never dealt with flunkies. In fact, I know you're not going to believe this, but being in AA, I don't have to do those things anymore. I don't read the paper. I don't listen to the news. And you know who called me about a week ago? George Bush. He wanted me to go to the Middle East with him and help him straighten out all those problems. But I guess what? I found out I can't do any straightening out today. I got a full-time job. It's keeping Leo sober. It's a full-time job. Not just tonight when I leave here and then I'm sober. I got a full-time job because like I told you, I'd like to drink. I was watching a football game. I seen that Coors commercial. And I generally don't watch those. Another thing my sponsor told me one time. I used to get in the car, and sad music would be on. So I'd start crying. And I'd turn it up a little louder. Please, I should have went to college. I should have been a lawyer. And you know what he told me? Change the station. Holy God. See, I didn't know you could do that. I thought you had to listen to me. I thought you had to watch those commercials. And they had a thing on tonight about Coors. And four guys in the woods were a flea-bitten mutt, an old fish, and some demon. They said, it don't get no better than this. Well, Jesus, if it don't get no better than that, I'd have blown my brains out. I can't believe that. What the hell would you want to be with a fish and a mutt in the woods somewhere? God almighty, I can't believe that. They used to show the Schaefer commercial years ago, and it always used to intrigue me. A guy would get in an elevator, and there'd be four girls. Now, that never happened to me. I drank plenty of Schaefer. We had an elevator before guys with knives. You know, we have a different scenario going. The favorite one I used to like was the Inglewood commercial, and it would be a big, sharp-looking guy, and this big, strong-looking dude. He's got a tux on and diamond rings, and he's got a Lamborghini over here and a Rolls Royce over there, and he's got gray hair, and I said, there's Leo. And they're at the Fontainebleau, and he's got a nice-looking babe around in front of him, low-cut gown. I'm looking over the TV to see if I can see anything. And there's a little fire in the background, and the word is for those intimate moments, drink Inglewood. And I remember I drank that crap one night. In fact, I drank a whole lot of it, to be honest with you. And we had a little fire in the background. It was my mattress burning up in the house. I had smoke off. In New York City, the fire department breaks your door down. They come in with hooks on. And I thought I had died and gone to hell because the guy standing over me with a big hook saying, come with me. But they never put those commercials on, do they? They never show you that. They show you all the garbage, you know. So I had to learn that. But I didn't stay around AA because I didn't like it. I knew they didn't drink there. And I had all the smart asses through. Guys said to me, you got a sponsor? I said, I made my confirmation. He said, what the hell are you talking about? Because I had to have an answer for you. I didn't, talked about God. I said, listen, I'm a theologian. I went to Catholic schools. A little guy came over and said, come here, I want to talk to you. I said, what? He said, there's only two things you got to know about God. I said, what's that? He said, there is one and you ain't him. So they straightened that out pretty quick. That's where that power greater than myself come from. And anyway, I went on and I went to work on Wall Street, and I got a nice secure job in Wall Street, and it was April 1972. They called me in for what I deemed to be a big promotion, and they fired me. Now, I bring that up for a reason. If you have a nice secure job and you're new around, hold on to it. 5 minutes after you're fired, you don't work there no more. Believe me, I went out and I had the arrogance to look up. I was working for the prestigious firm of Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Hurley. And I looked up and I said, I'll give them a week and they'll fold. And I went home and I told my wife, if they call you, tell them I ain't here. That'll be 19 years ago this April and they ain't called me yet. And I checked that machine out every once in a while to see if they're ringing. Now I had a host of other little problems. The year before this, I had gotten some trouble with this counterfeit money. And my brother came to me. And we were in a bar drinking, and he said to me, you got to stop taking those diet pills. They drive you bananas. I said, Jesus, Jerry, why didn't you tell me this before? And I stopped taking them, and I gained about 150 pounds in a week. I went from 140 to 290. I was fire engine red, blood pressure at stroke level. My hair stood up like this, like Don King. Woof, and a big puff. I had two suits left, those alcoholic businessman suits. I had a green one and a blue one. And one was full of pigeon crap and bullet holes and knife marks, and the other one was full of ketchup and mustard. And I used to, my neck blew up like this. I used to buy these big ties and try and make a big knot. And I had one pair of shoes left. I had to see these. I paid like 200 and whatever they were, these little pointy Italian guys. And these were sharp. But I was getting sick lately, and I wasn't the sharp guy I was years ago. You know, when you get sick, you'd lean way out and throw up. Now I'd be standing there, and I'd go, blah, this stuff. So it would get all over my shoes, and I would put them under the radiator to dry out, and they curled up like elf shoes. You had to figure it. When I dressed up, I looked like a tomato with a tie on, all blown up and... And I would head into New York looking for a job because I was an executive. And you would have to see the guy in personnel when I would come through that door. He'd be like this and he'd look up and he'd go, what the hell is this? Oh, my God. But here I got out of that attaché case. I got run over by a garbage truck because I dropped it. It was all mangled. And also, I was in a hurry one time and I went to the dentist. I was always in a hurry. I bought suits in a hurry. I had a green one and a blue one. Yeah, I'll take it. You know, I got a car in a hurry. And I went to this crazy dentist and he told me I need a lot of work. I said, what are we talking about? He said, Well, you got to come back. I said, what do you mean, Doc? I got to come back here. Take them all out. I said, I got no time to be coming back. So I got false teeth, and we used to put this gum and mints and chlorettes and scents in. My tongue looked black. It was like tar from all the scents and I was chewing. And then I'd put this painkiller, Benzedent, in the top of my teeth because they hurt. And then I'd be talking to the guy in personnel, and I'd go like this, and all the stuff would ooze out green. So I was now unemployable. I know it. And I had lists now. I had whack list, kneecap list, finger list, and the more you screw, the top of my list were my wires. Because that was a problem. I knew what it was. And I come home this night, and I knocked on the door. And I figured when she opens the door, bing, I'll ping her in the eyes. And then I said, no, I really don't want to do that. I said, I'll use the old routine. I'll stand there, and I'll sort of cry. I'm sorry, Mommy, you know. Well, I hated that. Well, I hated saying I was sorry. I wasn't sorry. I was broke is what the problem was. I never said I was wrong. Always, I'm sorry. I let me back in the crib. You know, I'll be okay. I'll be a good boy, Mommy. And she said to me, no, you got to go to AA. God almighty. So I run down to my favorite watering hole. I have 12 quick ones. I said to Quigley, I'm going. He said, where are you going? I said, I can't tell you. So, if anybody doesn't think you're alcoholic, I know just what you're talking about. I come flying through this door. I'm 290 pounds, fire engine red, blood pressure at stroke level. My hair stood up like this. I had slept in the park the night before because I fixed my wife good. I didn't go home. And the pigeons went to the bathroom all over me. I had pigeon crap all over me. I got my curled up shoes on, my attaché case. Now, I got everything going for me. I got no job, no money, no chance of getting any job, no chance of getting any money. I had borrowed, stolen everything. I was full of fear, guilt, hate, remorse, anxiety, depressions. Some guy walks up to me and says, how you doing? I said, wonderful. He said, are you an alcoholic? I said, no, my wife sent me. So he puts his arm around me. I said, easy with that arm around me, pal. So he said to me, sit down over there. It looks like you'll do when one comes along. And I sat down in a nice room full of people, and I looked around. I said, God, Hurley, you're at the bottom now. Look at these dirtbags. God almighty. The dredges of society. Look at them. God almighty. And then I got a break. Four guys I thought had died in my neighborhood came out of the kitchen. They come running over to me, and they said, how you doing? I said, how am I doing? I'm at AA. What the hell's wrong with you? They said, good. We'll pick you up tomorrow night. I said, what for? They said, a meeting. I said, a meeting? They said, yeah. I said, I'm at one. I said, no, wise guy. And I said, that's important because I want you to understand something. People being picked up is important. You know, Bob didn't call Bill. We were waiting for Bob to call Bill. We'd still be waiting. Bill was in trouble, and he called Bob. So if you got problems, call an alcoholic. Thank God these guys picked me up. And I was afraid of these suckers. You didn't show up Tuesday. You wouldn't be around Wednesday. So, God, now I had to go to meetings with them. And I hated it. I hated AA. I hated the speakers. I hated the stupid coffee. I hated them slogans. I wouldn't read the books. I was so dry, I was a fire hazard. I stayed dry for, I don't know, 90 days or, no, about 6 months. And then I moved. I got a break. I got out of my neighborhood, and I moved out to Long Island. Now I was a commuter and a land baron. And I'm out there. And I went past an old church. Jesus, I said to myself, there ain't nothing but farmers out here, for God's sake. The hell I meet? Amos McCoy and the Beverly Hillbillies at these meetings? I got a city slicker like me go here, so I stopped going. And I was in a bar. I was working back on Wall Street. It was Christmas Eve, 1972. I had a glass of whiskey in my hand, which I had been warned not to do, but I was just going to hold it. And someone said, Merry Christmas. And like 400 people looked at me. So I said, well, I'll just swiggle it. It was probably maybe two people who looked. I don't even remember, but I swiggled it, and I swallowed it. And I hadn't had a drink in like 5 months, and I said to the guy, give me a triple. Oh, fill it up. And I drank that night, and I woke up the next morning, and nothing happened. And when I say nothing happened, I mean I didn't get no fights, no car arrests. I wasn't impersonating police officers or gangsters or anything else. Nothing. In fact, I had a nice time. I woke up the next morning, there was no shaking, no gagging, no fear. So I went to bed, and I said, oh, screw you, AA. Oh, that's the wrong guy, Hurley. You're back. My wife said, what's going on in there? Because I'm cheering and bouncing around like I just won a big fight. I knew you had the wrong guy. And I did the same thing the next week. And the week after, I did the same thing, a little control drinking. You know what happened. My last drink was February 19th, 6 weeks later, February 19th, 1973. I woke up, I was firing red, blood pressure at stroke level. I was full of fear, guilt, hate, remorse, anxiety. I had depressions like you wouldn't believe. And the first thing I did when I woke up, I grabbed my wife and said, kill you! And I put her down because there was the problem. I knew what it was. And I jumped up. And I had a daily ritual now. I used to have to take a beer, or I preferred taking whiskey, but you know how you get caught short sometimes, you gotta take a beer into the damn bathroom, and I hated that, because beer makes noise, and I don't care what you do with it. I've taken it up in there, wrapped up in a towel, I've taken a pot in there with me, you flush the toilet, you throw the pot up in the air, and you pull it, and there was no church key, you had a church key, and I'm shaking, and you go, and the thing goes, it is, you know, so I like to take whiskey in, because I didn't have to go through that, and I had a, you know, anybody tells me you like to drink at the end, I don't know what you're talking about, because I would throw that one down or that big gulp and down, and it would turn around right about here, and up it's coming. So I'd be throwing up, my false teeth would be in a bowl, I'd be pushing them back in, and pinky up though, you know. Now the toilet seat stopped falling on my head, bang, it hit me in the head. I bought an alcoholic toilet seat with a little crack, so it fell on my shoulders, and then my wife would knock on the door and say, what the hell's going on in there? Now I got a problem. How do you get past your wife at 6 in the morning in your underwear with a bottle of whiskey telling her I just stopped in for one? You know, I'm having a social drink in my bathroom. So I would wrap it up in a towel and run past her and go inside, and the day began. And it ended with, I got a phone call from a friend of mine. Another important thing, and he called me up, he said, hey, you been drinking again? I said, yeah, it was nice to me. I said, yeah. Oh, good. He said, and we're talking, and he says to me, you want to go to a meeting? I said, no. And he said, good, I'll be right over. And he hung up. Oh, man, he hung up. Oh, jeez, now this stiff's going to show up at my door. How am I going to get rid of this guy? And he came, and he took me back, I don't know, for some reason they kept taking me around, and I got a sponsor, and I got all those stupid things that you're supposed to do, and 90 days later, they asked me to go out to speak. So what you see here, what you hear here, didn't arrive here. And let me tell you that one. When I got to AA, I stood like this. So it was scary, I guess. I don't know. Little old men frightened me. I don't know. But they started to work the miracle. They kept taking me, and I got into this program, and I started to go around speaking, and I would hear speakers, and I started to pick up the books. You know, my sponsors tell me, I want you to get the big book and the 12 and 12, and so I got them, and they were in my truck, and then he said to me, do you read them? I said, yeah. He said, well, let me see them. Oh, boy, I got to run home and pour ashes in them and scruffle them up because I hadn't read them. He used to tell me, I'll tell you the condition of your sobriety by the condition of your big book and your 12 and 12. I hated that because I wasn't reading them. I was afraid of getting sober. And it started to work. It was nice, and it's been nice ever since, my friends. AA has been great to me. Like I said before, I would have shortchanged myself. Who would ever, 18 years ago, I wasn't being invited anywhere, let alone to speak at an AA meeting. Any invitation came to my house, and on the bottom, P.S., don't bring Leo, he's a pain in the ass, you know. And I wasn't prejudiced when I got here. I hated you. I hated everybody. My wife used to tell me a nice guy moved in down the block. Nip his eye out when I got him. I didn't even know him. I hated him. I hated the neighbors. I hated everybody. My neighbors were terrified of me. They didn't know what to make out of me. And today I like everybody. In fact, I love everybody today. And it's nice. I wake up in the morning, go to the bathroom, I brush my teeth with toothpaste. Not Preparation H or some other stuff because I can't see what I'm using. Or shaving with razor blades, 18 years old, you know. These three stepchildren who I terrorized because I was from the old school. You watched in military fashion and you didn't. I banged you in the back of the head. And they hated me, and I hated them when I drank. I hated kids at all. Well, I would have tied them scruffers up. I'd put them in closets, and I whacked them away, and I fed them stuff they didn't want. I remember one time my little guy wouldn't eat his potatoes. I grabbed him by the hand. I shoved the crap in his mouth like I'm flying out his nose. I took him, and I kicked him into the bed, and I said, I'll kill you tomorrow night. You don't eat those. And I watch him today. He pushes potatoes over to the side. He don't eat them too well. But I don't do that no more to them. See, I used to hear that at AA. I beat my wife up. I did this, and I said to myself, well, how he is with the guys. But I never heard he didn't do that no more. And all of a sudden, I started to look around. I don't do those things no more. I have a 30-year-old daughter by my first marriage who told me 22 years ago, "Pray, you bum, go away and leave me and my mother alone. I hate you. You're a bad daddy. You come over here with guns and screaming." I ain't seen her since. And I called her up when I was sober. And I said, "I'm sober." And she said to me, "Good, you always should have been sober. If I want to see you, I'll call you." I ain't heard from her. And I can handle it. I really can. I have a 20-year-old now who's never seen me drink. And I sent her to a nice little school in Boston. And she sent me a card for my last anniversary, and it was on there. She wrote it out, too, and I call her my baby, and she hates that, you know. Of course, up from school, I call her baby girl, and I say, "Is my baby there?" She said, "Dad, will you stop with the baby business?" I said, "Well, you're my little girl." So anyway, she wrote me a little card, handwritten, and it said, "I don't want nothing. I don't need nothing, as I usually do. I just wanted to tell you." I opened it up, and it says, "I love you. I think you're the greatest man there is alive." And she signed it, "Your little baby." Now, that's nice. That's from AA, my friends, because I don't know how to get those things. Those three kids that I terrorized give me hugs today, and they tell me they love me. And, you know, I look at them and say, "Oh," I tell myself, "boy, is that a break." And I used to take these kids out to the zoo. Jesus, what a trip we used to have there. We would leave at 1 o'clock up Flappish Avenue. I would go right past the Maple, and I'd have 10 drinks in each bar. Boom, quick, boom, 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 boom. And before we got to this zoo in Prospect Park, some jerk put a merry-go-round. And I'd put these kids on air around 2 in the afternoon. I'd give them a 50 and say, "Here, I'll be right back. Got to go to the bathroom." I'd come back around 10 at night. I'd take them home. They'd be going around in circles from being on that merry-go-round all night. We never went to no zoos. Today, I can take them all over. They came up to see me. They traveled from Brooklyn up to all the way up to New Hampshire. And it's nice. You know, there's a joke about brains in this thing, and Frankenstein was looking for a brain for the monster, and him and Igor went off to the brain factory, and they go in, and they say, "You got a brain?" The guy said, "Yeah, there's three of them," and they go in and buy them. So they go inside, and there's three brains in this glass jar, and it says, "Scientist, 30,000. Physicist, 40,000. Alcoholic, 50,000. And the little guy said, "Master, what that?" He said, "I don't know." He calls the guy over. He said, "What the hell is this?" He said, "How come it's 30,000 for the scientist, 40,000 for the physicist? How come 50,000 for an alcoholic?" He said, "That brain ain't never been used." And that's the truth, you know. And today they spend all types of time and money on the early stages of alcoholism, the middle stages and the final stages. And they got volumes of that crap written all over. You could spend 10 years trying to read it. And a little old guy told me one time, "Come here. I'll simplify it for you." He said, "Remember in the early stages of drinking, if you got a drink with a fly in it, you send it back. Say, 'Hey, give me another drink.' In the middle stages, you throw the fly out and drink it. And in the final stages, you squeeze the fly in case he drank anything on you." So AA has been good to me, and it's been to everybody else. It's been good to my kids. It's been good to people I help. It's been good to, you know, and I travel to all over. And I go on 12-step calls all over. I go into places most people wouldn't even fly over. I speak in prisons. I spoke in Rahway Prison in Jersey, which is probably the worst. They put out that thing scared straight. And I'm an honorary member of Rahway today. You had to see this. Some big guy at the end come up to me, about 6'10". "If you think you got problems, will you hear this one?" And he's like, "Oh, I love you." I said, "Oh, Jesus, no." He says to me, "Can I have your phone number?" I said, "Certainly." I handed it up to him. He said to me, "Leo, I've been in here 10 years. I never had as much fun." He said to me, "Thanks for coming, this and that." And I said, "You know, I'm so naive. I do a lot of work in little flunky jails." And I said to the guy, "Good." I said, "Look, when you get out, give me a call. I'll take you to a meeting." "When are you getting out?" He said, "2009. I said, "2009? The guy sitting next to me, he said, "He's a short-termer." And I talked to these guys, and they didn't do much more than I wasn't capable of. And they're in there for 40 to 50 to hundreds of years for alcohol and drug abuse. I ain't saying they shouldn't be in there. All I'm saying is it's a shame they're in there. Because I didn't get caught for half of the things I'd done. And that's a problem. I could have killed you. I don't know. I don't know if I ever killed anybody. I tried to. You cross in front of my car, I'd run your ass over. And I'd chase you up the block, trying to hit you. I didn't have many blackouts. I had a couple of brownouts every once in a while. And I remember one time I was in an after-hours joint in New York, and I was leaving to go to Brooklyn, which is not a far drive. And it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, and off we went. I had a Mustang, and boom, off we went. And the next thing, it's about 11 in the morning. I pop through at the wheel, and a sign says, Buffalo, 100 miles. What the hell am I going to Buffalo for? I don't even know anybody in Buffalo. Now, I don't know if I hit anybody on the way up there, and I really don't care. I looked at the car. I turned around. I went back home. And I've done that many a time. I'm just lucky today not to be in jail. And it's all thanks to AA today. I don't, you know, I have some fun. It's nice to stand up here and laugh. It's nice to be able to laugh. It's nice to work this program in my affairs all the time. Because when I get up in the morning, I remember I'm an alcoholic. I go to bed at night. I take step number 10. I wake up in the morning. I read 11 and 12, 10 through if I can. I read the big book on a daily basis. I read the 24-hour book. And I don't read nothing else. I leave the paper alone. Arabs are going to have to get along without my help. Because I could solve anything, and I don't want to do that today. I got a full-time job that's keeping me sober and straight. I never use cocaine. I often think, let me walk a couple of... I had a party one night a couple of months ago. I had a couple of my old local cronies over, and I said, geez, if we were alone using drugs now, I'd have to call up my pusher and say, look, front me a half a ton. I'm having a couple of guys over. God almighty, yeah. And I don't want to be a social drinker. I hear people say that. That worries me. Why would you want to be a social drinker? Did you ever watch them dirtbags? Did you ever see them? They sip and talk and put it down. I was in a restaurant one night, and a nice-looking babe came in. I was watching her, and she ordered a martini, and she sipped it and stirred it, and she got up and went to the bathroom, and I watched her, and I said, back and forth, 15 minutes. I'm watching this one. And she had a cigarette, and I wanted to go over, and she only had a quarter gone. I wanted to go over and tell her, drink it for God's sake, would you? But, so why does any, I don't know about social sniffing. How would you do that one, you know? Or social shooting, why'd you only put the spike in a little bit, you know, so. But it's been nice to be here. Omaha is super. You people are super. I heard you. I was going to complain about something, but I know better. I told the committee tonight, I was going to say my pillow wasn't fluffy enough, but I heard you on tapes at other meetings when people get up here and complain. So I want to thank you for inviting me here. My friend Carl for picking me up, and I'd like to thank you for giving me back the love and respect of my God. So I got that today. I have three gods. I'm alcoholic. I'm mad at one, I'll talk to the other two. If I'm mad at two of them, I got the other guy to talk around. Give me back the love and respect of my family and my friends, and most of all, your love and respect, because there's nothing more awesome to me than when I walk into an AA meeting and people say, Leo, we're glad to see you. Oh, it goes through me like a harpoon, because I remember when there wasn't anybody glad to see me. There was not a soul on this earth glad to see me. And rightfully so, I made it that way. Me and my friend Alcohol. And I walked into an AA meeting and the guy said, we're glad to see you. I looked around, I thought someone come in behind me. He wasn't afraid of me and he wasn't scared of what I'd done. He was glad to see me. And I never forgot that, and I never forget it today when I go anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. People in AA say, we're glad to see you. I got a new family. I have a daughter I don't, that won't see me. I got thousands of daughters today that tell me, Leo, I love you. I got people tell me, thanks for helping my daddy out to go over there crying. Thanks for getting him sober. Man, what a nice thing it is. And what I wish for each and every one of you is when you leave here tonight, that you never, ever have to pick up another drink or a drug. I mean that for you, my friends. And I'm sure someone told you, but if they didn't, I love you. Good luck. God bless you, and thank you.